Good morning, and welcome to How You Do Anything is How You Do Everything. Good morning, Sherry.
Good morning, Ashwini.
Our assignment from yesterday, list your father's positive and negative qualities. Record and listen.
Right.
And here's our first caller. You are now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, this is Chris, who used to be calling from Germany, but is now calling from Florida.
Ah, well, welcome to the U.S.
Yeah, thank you.
What are you seeing?
So this timing is unbelievable because I'm back in my childhood home with my parents.
Oh, dear.
Yeah. Yeah. So, wow, really good timing with these. I noticed with my father that I would think of a positive quality. For example, he likes to laugh. And then right after, there would be a negative one attached to it. So for he likes to laugh, right after that came, but he gets angry really quickly.
Uh-huh. Uh-huh. And what did you see about that?
Well, it was interesting that they were so linked. Like, it was like there was not even a beat that was missed between those two.
Mm-hmm.
And mm-hmm. What also came up, well, my dad is from another country. So as a child, me and my brothers were raised in a very quote-unquote American way. Because my mom doesn't speak Spanish. She's, you know, born and raised in California. And then my dad always had this total other side to him because he was from another country. He had an accent. I was embarrassed sometimes by his accent in front of my friends.
Mm.
So there was this whole unknown quality to him, I guess, because he would speak Spanish and I had no idea what he was saying.
Uh-huh. Did your mother speak Spanish?
No, so we grew up only speaking English.
Uh-huh. So he would be talking to people outside the immediate family, mm-hmm. and you wouldn't know what he was saying.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And so what have you seen about how conditioning puts those two things together so quickly? The way you presented it, it kind of sounded like we're not allowed to have a positive experience without conditioning adding a negative to it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, and it was really like this because what just dropped in right now was being a child and being afraid to tell him that I had injured myself or that I had fallen or something. And I was so terrified because I didn't know if he was going to react one way or the other way.
Uh-huh. And I imagine the injury was not the only place where you were in that insecurity, that anxiety around how he might react to something.
Yeah, and I think it might be because he had this unknowable quality for me as a child. I guess I experienced his foreignness as some kind of mystery.
Oh, that those got put together.
Mm-hmm.
Aha. Wow. You know, Chris, I'm not saying this about you or anything else. It's just what dropped in. But that kind of thing could explain a lot about prejudice.
Yeah.
That kind of process that somebody that I don't understand, who is, that I can't read, basically, that I can't then trust. And if they react in ways that frighten me or whatever, then it gets kind of globalized.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. I mean, and also, I must have been conditioned in some way that must have complicated how I view myself.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, my mother is blonde and I'm not. And I remember going to kindergarten and someone asking if that was my real mother.
Oh, uh-huh.
Which as a child, it's really confusing.
Yeah. Well, confusing and upsetting.
Yeah,
right? Because
it was.
That introduces a perspective or a possibility to a child's mind that
mm-hmm.
can really kind of shake the foundations.
Yeah.
Wow. Well, much to see in this, huh?
Yeah. Yeah, and a lot to explore while I'm home, so.
Yes, yes, to be able, from a perspective of practice, right, that there's all that stuff that gets put together and it becomes our worldview, and then we have a chance with awareness practice to see it with fresh eyes. What is is that so? You know, what if a child put together as reality wasn't what was really going on? What might the other possibilities be if you just dropped into these people's lives as a full-grown man?
Right.
How might you see them? So much opportunity there. And to be very patient with yourself as you periodically start grinding your teeth or...
Well, it was exactly like what Jill said, I think, on a call a couple of days ago about being in New York City. And you can be an awareness practitioner in New York City in an office. And
yes,
I immediately had the insight right then, oh, okay, this is my first time being home as an awareness practitioner.
Yes. And so if it can be done in an office building in New York City, by golly, I must be able to do it with my parents.
Exactly.
Yeah. All right. Thank you, Chris.
Yeah, thank you.
I love that, Sherry, that we go through our life without practice, and then we get to revisit and have our life with practice in mm-hmm. the same situations. And mm-hmm. what a fresh perspective it brings to how things are rather than mm-hmm. how it got put together in how things were.
Yes. And to look at it for the way Chris was presenting it, I mean, there you are, 5 years old, and somebody mm-hmm. says this thing to you. There's just nowhere. There's nowhere to put it in, and yet we mm-hmm. do put it somewhere in our little mm-hmm. 3 or 4 or 5 or 6 or 7 year old brain, and mm-hmm. then it's just there, as if it's some kind of immutable truth.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yeah. That there is no making sense of it because there are no frameworks to do that.
Yes.
And
yeah.
so it just remains as something that is so without our being able to actually see it any other way. It sort of takes a belief, right? It gets an orientation, an assumption.
That's that thing that I was reading recently that talked about children as living in a black and white world. And so mm-hmm. in that, exactly that way, there's a, and then something gets put together, and that's it. There's no gradation of possibility. There's just, that's how it is. Mm-hmm. And without awareness practice, that's how it remains.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Wow.
All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Ashwini. This is Art in Maryland.
Hello, Art.
Hey, how's it going?
Great. You?
Good. Good.
What are you seeing?
Well, I recorded some things about my father. I missed the first part of the show. I think that's what we're on, right?
Yes.
Yeah, great.
You'll have to go back and listen to it, the first part.
I will. Thank you. Yes, I will. And today's a big day for, it's just for some coming into some awareness. I have a very dear family member that, was attacked. And we were in Washington last night protesting, and my father, he was swept up into all of this kind of behavior, and it impacted my family of origin. And so, anyway, that's kind of going on. And so I've been kind of active speaking out. And with respect to my daughter, I've been neglectful in regard to paying attention to her suffering and her experience. minimizing it, and not to her, but in my lack of action. And so that's up. Yeah.
So Art, would ignorant be a good
sure
thing to introduce here, right?
Yeah.
So it's not that you were neglectful.
Yeah.
You just didn't realize.
Yeah.
You just didn't have the awareness.
Yeah.
So if we let conditioning put those judgmental labels on us, it first of all, it clouds everything. It can result in feeling bad and all kinds of things that are not necessary, when actually all that happened is that you were ignorant in the truest sense of that word. You just didn't know.
Yeah.
And as soon as you realized, you began to go in a different direction.
That's true.
Yeah. And that's the thing to keep in mind. And hopefully, say with your daughter, you can have that conversation. And in that conversation, an apology can be warranted as long as it comes from a place of, I'm really sorry that happened.
Mm-hmm.
Not, I'm sorry that I was a bad father, or I'm sorry that
oh.
I... Okay, I'm really sorry. I wish I had seen it sooner.
Mm.
I see it now. And, you can even add the thank you for helping me come to this awareness.
Yeah. Yeah, and it something comes up that... it's such a sensitive topic, and people get re-traumatized. I don't know if that's a way
well,
that I'm getting talked out of it
that,
or not.
I doubt that people get re-traumatized. What I would wish for everybody is the practice, the two-handed recording practice, right, that allows a person to move into a place where the traumatized individual can speak and be heard.
Right.
So, because what we see with this particular topic and every other topic in human existence is that there's something happens to a person, and we must survive it. And so whatever we do to survive it is what happens. And ego then takes that over in conditioning and just starts piling on layer and layer and layer and layer. It's not like it ever went anywhere. In fact, it has a tremendous power to control a person's life because it does remain hidden. Okay? And so bringing it out into the open, I don't think re-traumatizes people.
Okay.
I think that's the way to end the trauma.
Yeah, okay, and that's partly how it's been not working. Yeah, that's part of the not workingness of it actually being
which is
kept in the dark.
Oh, absolutely. Yes, yes, yes.
Yeah.
That's how conditioning, how ego controls people. So this happened. Well, you can't say anything. Don't forget that this happened. Remember how awful it was. Think about it all the time. Be afraid. Be anxious. Let it, but you can't say anything about it. Don't say anything to anybody because, that's conditioning in action.
Yeah. Thank you. And that helps me with respect to my father, too, because I can't talk about it. Don't talk about it. You know, and he's passed, and I suspect he is glad I brought it up.
Right, right. Just as you're glad.
Yeah, me too.
Mm-hmm.
Thank
yeah.
you so much. Yeah.
Oh, you're welcome, Art.
Okay.
Take care of yourself.
Gotcha.
All right.
Yeah. Go happy.
Gotcha.
Mm-hmm. Thanks, Art. Sherry, two things were dropping in on a practice process level, which is so important that there's a way in which we don't know till we do. And when we come into awareness, we have to be vigilant that self-hate doesn't take it to make us feel bad and make it
mm-hmm.
about it again.
Mm-hmm.
And that coming mm-hmm. to awareness is really a going from ignorance to awareness, which is all the Buddha was talking about. It's from not paying attention to paying attention and then becoming becoming cognizant of something. And then your heart is open in that moment. You're completely mm-hmm. with life, and that's not a moment that self-hate should rob. And I love the way you, the suggestion you made in practically how we express that I'm disappointed that, or I'm really sorry that happened to you, without mm-hmm. letting it become a way in which I become the center of attention by being the person who feels bad.
Right. Right. Yes. Right. And in that case with Art and his daughter, the way ego would like that to work is that then she winds up having to take care of him because he feels yes. so bad and guilty about
yeah
whatever. Yeah, that's a good that's
well,
a really
and
good
in
point.
Some and in some way it's a real bamboozle because if I say I'm really sorry because I did not pay attention to what it was going on for you. What has happened is we've negated ourselves. We've accepted that we are bad mm-hmm. people, that there's something wrong with me.
Mm-hmm.
So it's
mm-hmm.
not just making it about ego. It's actually adding to ego's cause by accepting the negation it's offering to us about ourselves.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. Oof. Oof. It's a twofer for ego, isn't it?
It's absolutely.
Instead of losing ground, it gets to take a couple of steps forward in its control of us.
Exactly. And that other point that is so important is how we're conditioned to believe that revisiting something is traumatic. Mm-hmm. In that conditioned way, we're telling the story, but the invitation to be with ourselves
yeah.
in that and work through it rather than the rejection that comes with not with it or rejection or invalidation of the experience that comes with not being allowed to say it. It doesn't matter how it comes out, how we feel, how the energy is, what we say, what we do, but we are held through that experience so we can have what happened to us rather than
yes.
not have what happened to us.
Well, yes, and we've seen this time and time again in retreats and workshops. But what you just said that is the crux of the matter is people will tell the story endlessly. You know, they've been to 1,000 therapists and they've done every kind of program and they've done. But all that's happening is that ego is telling a story about something that happened to someone else. And
yeah.
And that don't go there again, that it'll be too awful. It'll be too awful if you go back and experience it again, is ego's way of keeping that position, right? That controlling position in our lives. And what you are talking about is when we really come into relationship with the person that whatever that is happened to, and we are
yeah.
coming to that relationship from compassionate awareness. That's when the whole thing dissolves. And the person
yes.
who has been, we talk about it, kept at the bottom of the well, that person is finally free to be alive. And that is not a traumatized person. That's a person who's been kept in bondage. So
yes.
as soon as we turn them loose and are able to say, I see that happened to you. I'm sorry that happened to you. Let's go. Like, come on, we got a whole life to live. That person is ecstatic to be alive and
mm-hmm.
present and participating.
Yes, because to me, we're kept at the bottom of the well. We're a prisoner of the conditioning, not to
yeah.
the circumstance.
Exactly. Yep, precisely so. It's a plot. It's
mm-hmm.
a giant bamboozle.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right, here's our next caller. You're now live on the air. Would you please introduce yourself?
Hi, Sherry and Ashwini. This is Bev from Louisville, Kentucky.
Well, Bev, I just want to tell you that when I was meditating this morning, it dropped in. We haven't heard from Bev in a while. And here
well, the reason is the first week in September, I had hip replacement surgery. So I have been in like recovery mode for the last
uh-huh.
month. So,
and how's it going?
Beautifully. And
good.
The thing that I really learned from this experience is, first of all, how vicious conditioning is, you know, in
oh.
taking taking you in a vulnerable, when you're in a vulnerable place. And my surgery went very well, but I was not able to tolerate the pain medicine. So I have pretty much done the recovery without, you know, without any,
with
any
a couple
aid to help deal with my pain. And uh-huh. so that I was prepared. I had made tapes. I felt like I had a good mindset, but I had, when you say you don't know what's going to, I had no clue. I did not handle myself as quote, I thought I would. So
yeah.
it's
yeah.
been a really, but what I learned through it all is conditioning tried to tell me, because when the body is in that type of severe pain, it's pretty much you're in a survival mode. You're just trying mm-hmm. to get through the day. And mm-hmm. so even though, I mean, in the hospital, I never lost sight of my practice. And I'm so grateful. You know, when you say we practice for times like this, I get that. It was always there with me. I took my recorder to the hospital. There were nights I wouldn't have made it through the night. I just listened to my nattering recordings and my reflective listening buddy. When I spoke to her each week, I knew I was okay. So my practice really held me. But conditioning wanted to make me think I wasn't practicing. Well, if you were really practicing, you wouldn't have all, you know, or you wouldn't cry because it hurts so bad. You'd have, you know, and I saw that even though it was like it was screaming at me the whole time, but I never let go of my practice. And I was practicing, even though it didn't look like I had this image of how I was going to get through this. But it has just been an experience. I really understand what you mean when you say we practice for times like this, because my practice got me through it, even though, like I said, there were days I just could barely hold on, but I did it.
Yeah.
I made it.
But you did hold on. That's the point.
I did.
And the other thing that you got to see in this, Bev, is what a load of horse pucky it is that ego is going to tell us what practice looks like.
Yeah.
Something that has absolutely no idea about any of it. And so, yes, sometimes we're just skating along, right? Everything is great. It's so easy. The sky is blue. Everything is beautiful. We're filled with gratitude. And sometimes we have clenched teeth just holding on by our fingernails. And it's all practice.
Yes. And I remember there were, especially early on when I was so sick and so in pain, and I would get out a tape and I'd listen to it and I would think, but, and I remember you say, there are no buts, that practice applies to everything. And it's true. And I just kept, and having those tapes, I call them my nattering tapes, because I also made tapes in preparation because I knew that it would be tough. And they got me through because they took me back to what was true for me in my life.
Yes.
And it was just an experience that I have just learned so much about myself and about, where, and I am practicing. I have an established, steady practice that got me through this. And it's still carrying me through it.
That's right. And a growing trust and faith that it will sustain you through anything.
Yes.
And you will not abandon yourself no matter what.
Right. Exactly. And it also used the tactic of when you are in this position, I was for probably 10 days, I was like a baby. I was totally dependent on other people for everything. And so conditioning wanted me to go to the place where you're such a burden and, you know, I'm already feeling bad and then I feel bad because I'm such a burden and this poor person. And I had to step back and think, no, this is a gift. This person's given me a gift of care and, you know, and just every step of the way trying to make me feel like what a failure you are. You should be doing better. And I just learned that that's not true. So that was a
and what a
wonderful
life lesson that is, right?
Yes.
What you can take from this is that nothing that voice in your head says to you is true. Nothing.
Exactly. And the last thing I have to say before I go is when I saw my surgeon this week and he showed me an X-ray, I was to the point, I had an accident, and I worked for 3 years to try and rehab my hip, and it just didn't work. And they told me it was not going to get better. So it was a hard decision to have the surgery. But when I looked at that X-ray, I have a beautiful, perfect artificial hip. It's just perfect. And then I looked at that surgeon and thought, how in the world that I got to be the recipient? I got the second chance. I would have been wheelchair bound. And this person, and that we have a world that we live in that there's this kind of technology that and knowledge and intelligence, and I just feel so blessed.
And it's available to us.
Yes.
Right?
Yes.
Because most of the world, it's not available to. So we are so fortunate, fortunate. Yeah.
Yes.
Which, again,
and
those
also,
voices in conditioned mind are never going to want us to notice.
Yes. And then also, crying is a wonderful pain reliever.
Yes. It's so therapeutic, isn't it?
So thank you I just am so grateful to have had these tools, these practice tools, and the Sangha. My reflective listening buddy was my lifeline. Every week when I talked to her, I knew I was okay. I left that conversation knowing I'm okay. So thank you so much for everyone that's out there. And I'm just so happy to have this practice. So thank you.
Me too. Yeah, thank you. And on behalf of myself and the entire Sangha, you're welcome.
Okay. You all have a wonderful day. Gosho. Bye-bye.
Gosho.
Thank you, Bev. Sherry, we have 2 minutes. I'm not sure we could squeeze another caller, or would you like to give it a go?
Let's go on to our next exercise because it's a big day here on retreat.
Yes, all right. So our exercise for today, list your mother's positive and negative qualities. Record and listen.
All right. Well, thank you so much. Thank you, Ashwini.
Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you, everybody.
And we all wish Bev a speedy recovery.
A continuing speedy recovery. Yeah. And you know, Ashwini, when you say that, for everybody who is struggling, there really are times when there kind of isn't anything going on. And we have the luxury of being concerned because there wasn't a parking place when we got to where we were going or, you know, whatever is going on. And then there are times, with the Sangha as large as ours, there are a good number of people on any given day or week or month that are really struggling with hard, hard, hard things. And so for all of us, just to acknowledge the gift that it is for us all to be together, to be doing this together, and to have a practice that will be there for us, and a Sangha that will be there for us during those times that without, we might not get through.
Yeah. Well, and I love, I mean, it's something that you've always said, which is that, you know, when it's going well, it's great to know that it isn't going to go well on some occasions and vice versa. But the point is that practice doesn't look like anything particular in any moment. Practice is being present. And so being present to any moment doesn't look in any way, in any shape or form, that conditioning holds a standard about how it should go.
Yeah.
And so just to recognize that sometimes we have the ability to meditate and record and listen and attend a retreat and do every single practice offering, which then gets turned to be that's how practice is, and this is the feeling of practicing. And yet sometimes survival actually is one of the most alive places of presence.
Yes.
If
and
that's
and
what
to
we
acknowledge
bring to
it. We're present to it, right?
Yeah. Yes, exactly so. Yeah.
Yeah. So good. All right. So good. Well, thank you once again. Take care, everybody.
Thank you.
Treasure yourself.
Go happy.